Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the looky likey voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. You've sprung this one upon me today.
You must feel quite good about yourself, quite happy within yourself at the moment.
Enjoy life, yeah.
You must feel really good.
No, I feel fantastic, yeah.
It's no secret, of course, that we now live in the same neighbourhood, the same complex.
Yes.
Yes, you brought me here, kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
Against my will.
Yeah.
Couldn't stand to be without me.
Mm.
And I've got to say, mate, on the past three occasions or so that I've been out of my flat, people have come up to me and gone, oh, hi, Richard. Hi. Yeah. How are you, Richard? Are you okay? Because they think that I look like you, which can only be a compliment for you, my friend. Not a problem. You are welcome.
Okay, I've got much to say about this. The first thing I'm going to say is that we should let everybody know that this complex that we live on, the average age is about 93. So many don't have the eyesight maybe that they used to have. And seeing anybody under the age of 40, naturally they think they're going to look very, very similar. So yes, look, compliment. You are a very fine looking gentleman.
Thank you.
I will give you that. I'm not taking it as quite the compliment that you think it might be. That's the truth.
Take it as you wish. I've just got to say, they keep coming up to me and keep thinking that I'm you. What I would say as well is that they're very happy to see me.
There you go.
Which must mean that they're happy to see you.
I've made a good name for myself on this complex. I say hello to everyone. I'm very warm, very genuine, as you know, and I think it's gone down very well. So you now get to enjoy the fruits of my labour. I don't know if labour is the right word. It's that difficult to be nice to people. No, true. But you get to enjoy that now. So the question is, when they call you by my name or they think you're me, do you then continue and play up to the part or do you correct them?
No, I correct them. I correct them. The first time it happened, I did look at them rather blankly.
Right.
And they were like, why is he looking at us strangely? And I then revealed that I was not Richard Lee.
Right.
I'm in fact Matt Beadle. At which point they went, oh, the host of the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Of course.
Of course they did. Yes, absolutely.
But no, it's all good. It swings both ways for us, I suppose, doesn't it? There you go.
How do you
both
mean?
Benefit.
Yeah, no, I will take that. I'm absolutely happy with that. I'm not going to make any nasty comments to you. I mean, look, I'm slightly more muscular, but let's not go down those routes. Again, I'll go back to my initial point. I guess the fact that we are both under 40 living on this complex. I mean, look, it could well be a retirement complex. Let's be honest. I have retired. I have got my pension. I'm over the age of 35 as a footballer. So this felt like the right move to move here. And of course, we've got some very interesting people that surround us. But I do go back to my initial point. It does not surprise me that they think we're the same person.
Okay, well, how's your week been aside from that? Good.
It's been good. I have been to watch two Watford games, actually. Went to the game during the week, the cup game against Stoke, which of course Stoke won. I then went to the game against Newcastle, which was a draw, which you came to as well.
I got you
a ticket, not with me, of course, but I did get you a ticket over the other side of the ground,
all the way down the other end.
Well, look, I couldn't squeeze you into the corporate hospitality, could I? So look, just be grateful that I got your seat.
Thank you, I appreciate
it. No, you are welcome. You are more than welcome.
We're going to be talking about that game, of course. Very eventful, that game. Ben Foster and Carl Darlow, the goalkeepers, they're all the rest of the action from the Premier League and the EFL. Shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
Starting at the Brentford Community Stadium, I think it's called, isn't it? Brentford 3, Liverpool 3. What a game this was. And let's talk about David Raya.
Yeah.
A quite remarkable save from Diogo Jota in the first half. A crucial stop to keep out his own man, Pontus Janssen, from the cross from Sadio Mane late on. On both occasions, the scores were level.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people now are seeing what all the fuss was about over the last couple of years. Of course, heavily linked with Arsenal a year or so ago. Brentford did so well to hold on to him. And I think we can all see why they were so keen to do so. Such a crucial player in how they play. But of course, when it comes to his shot-stopping ability, it's just phenomenal. You know, you look at him and the classic comment will be that he doesn't necessarily have the stature of some of the other goalkeepers in the league. I think I'm right in saying that he will be probably the smallest in terms of height. But when you look at the speed at which he moves, obviously his distribution is fantastic. But the fact that he comes for as many crosses as he does, for me, he's one of the most complete goalkeepers in the Premier League. And I think what we did see against Liverpool, crucial saves, crucial times. That first save in particular, again, I've said this comment about other goalkeepers, but this is the type of save that I don't see many other goalkeepers making. The notes that I wrote down, reactions first and foremost, because as the ball's come across, he needed to react. But it's actually the awareness and the ingenuity is the word I'd use, because the way in which in that moment, and this is where, again, goalkeeping sometimes it isn't black and white. You've got to try and figure out a way in order to get the ball away from danger. And you can actually see the way in which he moves his hand so quickly to get the angle on the ball, which takes it wide of the post. I mean, if he parries it anywhere else, someone would have followed it up and scored. So it is a truly remarkable save. We may well be starting the show with the save of the weekend. I mean, it's only going to go downhill from here, I'm afraid. So by all means, feel free to switch off now. But no, it was. It was a fantastic save. And he really is making a big, big name for himself.
There was a good article in the Times by Alison Rudd in the build-up to this game, actually, where he was just talking about the way that he is a goalkeeper for Brentford. And he said, I don't think many people have noticed this, but we scored the goal against Aston Villa. Rico and Sergi were on the halfway line and the player with Sergi went down. So I said, Sergi, go up. And then he got the ball and crossed and we scored. If I didn't tell him to go up, then we wouldn't have scored that goal. He basically talked about his importance within a team, not just as the goalkeeper, but as a communicator as well.
Yeah, which is what we will never see. And this is where I think we, of course, bang the drum a lot about goalkeepers and the importance to their team above and beyond what you may see in terms of distribution or shot stopping or cross taking, for instance. But I just think with a lot of the modern goalkeepers, which I'd certainly include David Raya in, I think what you're seeing is that effectiveness. The fact that, yeah, it may well be the communication side of things. A lot is very much, we keep using the term playing on the front foot, but looking to affect play where possible, looking to come and claim more and more crosses. It may mean that you make more mistakes, but you are being that much more effective for the team. And I just think that goalkeepers, a lot of these modern goalkeepers that we're seeing come through now, the word that I'd use is bravery. You know, really trying to impact a game in the way they do. Look, sometimes it can go wrong. And I know this has been brought up before, the mistake that David Raya made in the Championship playoff final, for instance, where he was so far advanced. I think that we're now widely seeing exactly why this is the way in which goalkeeping will go. You know, when you are that effective and you're able to create as many attacks as you are and you are that influence in the team. And communication, I would say, is huge for a goalkeeper because, again, it's stuff that you've heard before, but you can see the entire pitch. You can see everything that's going on. You can effectively guide and manage those in front of you. And if you can be effective with your communication, then, of course, you can prevent so much at source. And certainly from what David Reyes said there, it sounds like he's playing that role very well.
He spoke about that goal that he conceded in the playoff final as well in this article. It is a really good read, like I said, the Times, Alison Rudd. He also bit back at Richard Lee.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did, yeah. He said, I've been listening to your podcast.
Of course he did.
And you harping on about me time wasting last week. So he's bitten back, mate. He said, he was asked about it. He said, I had a massive hole in his gloves. So when he changed his gloves, I had a massive hole, Raya says, with a touch of indignation. I could have put my finger through the right glove if I wanted to. The glove got stuck on the crossbar and ripped off. There's no way I'm changing gloves halfway through a game just to waste time. I have a superstition with gloves. You need to keep the gloves you wore for the warm-up.
Interesting. Well, interestingly as well, I mentioned I went to the game on Tuesday, which was Watford against Stoke. Rob Elliott played in goal for Watford. And then Rob came over afterwards, someone I worked with. So we had something to eat, had a bit of a chat. And he is also a owner of that particular glove company. So he did give us, and you were there as well, of course, present. So he did give us that information, explain that it was exactly that. Problem is, we'd already done the podcast. So it was too late. We'd already chastised him. We'd already made the decision that he was time-wasting. There is nothing more to it. Case closed. And then we were corrected the very next day.
Which is fine.
Yeah, that's...
And we've given it here. We kind of did that thing where once you commit to the lie, you've just got to keep going.
You've got to keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
Just quickly, Alisson, for the third goal. We actually had a WhatsApp in on this one from an SW, and he said, fantastic game. My point when you watch it back is that it's clear Alisson lays down, and had he stood up, he'd have kept it out. Great finish. However, what did you make on that one?
It's a good point, and I think it's a tough one because I think then if he comes out and stands up, for instance, it may well be that the player looks to then slide it into what is effectively the near post, which you could argue is an easier finish. If he can see the goalkeeper's come out and there is a gap there, he could just a nice firm side foot into that near post, and it's a goal. Of course, what Alisson's done has negated that, and he's spread in such a way that you can't now slide it past him. So it does mean it's a tougher finish. But of course, when you see what happens, you can't help but think, oh, if only he had done this, then maybe it might have been different. But this is where I think, as a keeper, sometimes you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I think that either way, the finish was so good. We've got to give some credit to the finish, because at the point of impact, Alisson doesn't have a bad position. He's got quite close to the ball. He's made himself reasonably big, but you see the way in which he slid in. He's done it very much to ensure that it can't be slid past him. But of course, the one that you're then susceptible is exactly what happened. But even that, to dink it over and get it into that near post in the way that he did and get enough pace on it, I think sometimes, personally, I think you just have to give credit to the striker.
Okay, Arsenal 3, Tottenham 1. Aaron Ramsdale. Now, I'm not sure there's a goalkeeper we've spoken more about in the past year or so, but watching that again, he is bang on his game, isn't he? He just looks so good. There was a good save from Heung-min Son in the first half, an excellent save from Lucas Moura later on. But as we've said so many times, it's his demeanour. It's the way he's speaking to his defence. It's the fact that he's so commanding. He seems so strong. The fans are chanting his name. He's not overawed by the position he's in at all, which he shouldn't be. He was bought for £24 million, so you shouldn't be overawed. But there were question marks. And I think, more importantly on this one, I was talking to some Arsenal fans in the week about this. He has the respect of his defence, which, again, he should. But again, I think there were question marks. And since that 5-0 defeat to Man City, Arsenal have had, as a collective, the same back five. So you've had Ramsdale in goal, you've had Tierney, White, Gabriel and Tomiyasu. And as a collective, those five are all under 25. And the Arsenal fans that I spoke to said, when they make errors, Ramsdale is on them. Like we saw in that game at the weekend, whereas Leno perhaps isn't as forthcoming.
I mean, potentially, what I'd say about Aaron Ramsdale, the word that I've written down is that is passion. You know, he does. He seems like he's full of confidence, really passionate in the way that he plays. I think, and we do harp on a lot about the start of last season, but I think that's probably one of the best things that could have happened for him as an individual, as a goalkeeper. I think coming through that in the way that he did, and if anything now, he's riding the crest of the wave. The challenge for him now is how long can he keep it up and can he continue to grow? And if he can, then the age that he is, and you mentioned that, you know, look, this is obviously Arsenal's strategy in regards to the younger players they're bringing in, that they're blooding and trying to build a defensive unit that allows them to then create a team that once again is going to challenge. And in fairness, again, football changes very quickly, but over the last few games, you're starting to see that solidity defensively, and certainly Aaron Ramsdale's playing a huge part in that. And he is, he's playing with such energy. The two saves in particular, the one at the near post, I liked for the fact that he set well, he positioned well, he wasn't too low. As an example, the classic Giggs against Seaman, you know, was very similar, where it's fired in from that sort of angle and went in the roof of the net. Aaron Ramsdale set ever so slightly higher and his reactions were very good. So it was an excellent save. And then, I mean, the save he made later on at 3-1, which was vital in the end. I think, you know, that goes in. Then, of course, it could be a grandstand finish and a very difficult finish. Yeah, phenomenal save. You know, the moment it takes the deflection to then have the power, I use the word awareness again, but to be able to figure out a way to get there and to get his hand to it and get it onto the bar. A save, again, that not many goalkeepers make.
Leeds United 1, West Ham United 2. Good game this again. And Ian Melier in fine form, but on the losing side. Three very good stops from Mikel Antonio's side, Bemrama, and the one-on-one with Pablo Fornals. The goal which didn't stand as well. Blatant foul.
Yeah, it'd be a frustrating one for him. It's once again, it's a case of if they end up getting a point from that, I'm sure that everybody is waxing lyrical and he'd be getting all sorts of love on the back of this performance. Unfortunately, when you do lose, it can be forgotten very quickly. But that's what we do here on Between the Sticks, is to find the performances within defeats often. And it was a very good performance. Certainly the save first half that he made on the angle was good. He made a very big save with his left hand. But the one that I actually liked most was the bravery that he showed on the one-on-one. I just thought his timing was very good. And then he engaged when he needed to engage. And we speak about it a lot. But sometimes you have to go in effectively head first. And I thought that he showed really good bravery on that. And then, yeah, the blatant foul. How that wasn't given in real time. I mean, and they did have to wait a little while before it was revealed. And I know, you know, you've got your thoughts on VAR. But when things like that happen, for me, that's where I'm so happy we have VAR, because I've had that once or twice as a keeper. I think we all have. Everybody listening in will have had moments like that when the goal is given and you get the classic narrative, oh, goalkeepers are protected. You know, it's good that one of them's given every now and then. Like, no, absolutely not. That's a foul. I'm trying to catch the ball. Your elbow's in my face. I cannot catch the ball. That's a foul.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of VAR, but for instances like that, you shouldn't have to have VAR, like true. You're saying. That should just be called. Such a blatant... elbowed him in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, you've never seen anything more blatant.
No.
Not a malicious elbow, just was what it but was. They both jumped up, but he elbowed him in the face.
But the point is, those have been given before. Similar ones have been given. And I think that's where, as a goalkeeper, it can be so infuriating when something like that is given. Similarly, by the way, there's ones where at times you know you get away with them, where the foul is given and you think, actually, there probably wasn't a great deal of contact there. Like, I'll absolutely take it, which, again, that's not going to work in your favour, certainly with VAR. But I think moments like that, I mentioned I had one or two, and I'm sure that most of you guys did as well. Moments like that, when it is then called back and the correct decision's made, for that reason and for those moments, I am pleased that we have it.
Okay, speaking of goals which did stand but maybe shouldn't have, Manchester United 0. Aston Villa 1.
Yeah, shouldn't have stood.
Okay.
Shouldn't have stood. It's irrelevant where the ball ends up for me. The point is he interfering with him at the moment that the ball is headed? And is he offside? Yes and yes. So shouldn't be given. Because for me, it shouldn't be dependent on where the ball ends up. It should just be a case of, at the point of impact, is the player offside creating an issue or not? And unfortunately, he was. And so that then would impact David De Gea. Does it make a difference then if the ball is headed towards David De Gea and he doesn't quite make the save because of him? Do we then call it back? Well, that doesn't quite make sense. It's got to be based at source. What is the situation when the ball is being headed, he is offside, and he is effectively touching David De Gea and therefore making a bit of an issue for him?
Well, this is the issue, again, with modern football, isn't it? When you say at source, because if we take a scenario such as a striker being offside from a certain passage of play, one team has the ball at one end, the defenders have it, the striker is 10 yards ahead of the back line at the other end of the pitch. The goalkeeper's not saying anything, and the defenders are looking at him going, he's miles offside, let's not worry about him. It goes down the line, decent diag, the winger goes streaming down the line, he's onside, at which point the attacker then becomes active, but because he's offside from the initial ball, it doesn't count because he's not included in that phase of play. But he's then 10 yards ahead of the defenders, the winger crosses it in, the striker's on his own, taps it in beyond the goalkeeper. That's not given as offside because he wasn't offside for the initial ball that went over to the winger. Mm. But that's at source as well, right? Because his position with the initial ball has been factored in by the defenders and the goalkeeper.
I hear what you're saying. I think with this, the difference is, you talk about phase of play, this is all the same phase of play. The moment it is headed, the player is still very much active and involved in that phase of play. Active because, and involved because, he is right next to David De Gea. I just don't think it can be a case of only counting if the ball is in the vicinity of David De Gea, because that is something that isn't within anybody's control. You know, that is what it is. The bit that is black and white is the fact that he is there in an offside position interfering with play. So for me, it should be given offside every time. I don't think much was made of this.
Not by the players. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer spoke about it after the game and said it's absolutely offside. They spoke about it on Match of the Day 2. But the players themselves didn't make an appeal. So maybe that's the issue. But we spoke about it last week, didn't we? Robert Sanchez.
Yeah, and I think with the players, a big reason for that is they don't necessarily know that he's offside. Ordinarily, the player on the keeper isn't offside because you might have a man on the post or there's often someone that little bit deeper. So they wouldn't have even considered that it was offside. But I think, you know, had they have seen the screens and seen that he was next to David De Gea and doing what he's doing, I've got no doubt they all would have appealed. But then again, it shouldn't be that. It shouldn't
need be on
to
the players,
be
no.
an appeal no. in order to... No, for me, this is... And again, love to hear your thoughts on any counter-arguments that anybody out there's got, because for me, it is a blatant offside and something that does need to be addressed, because we're seeing more and more of these situations. So I think they need to address it very, very soon. But if someone's got a counter-argument, by all means, put it forward.
You mentioned the posts there, by the way. Jonathan Pearce, who was on one in commentary, said, put a fullback on the post. Why? If it's worked for generations, should it not work now?
Mm. I mean, look, I always like to have someone on the posts, if I could. I'd often have the man on the front doing that job, protecting the near post area, and then folding back in to be on the post. Interestingly, not one that we're going to talk about today, but I did watch the St Mirren Aberdeen game yesterday, and that was a good example where there was a man that should have been doing that job, didn't retreat to the post quick enough, and actually the header went in effectively where he should have retreated to. But if you get the man doing that, effectively they can do two jobs in one and probably prevent a goal like this. And personally, I always liked having the back post covered because effectively it just made your goal that little bit smaller. You know, if they are going to head it, you know that you're protecting the middle of the goal and you'd like to think that both posts are covered. And in theory, you will concede less. I liked it. I see that a lot less teams are utilizing that now. They'll no doubt have their reasons for it, and I'm sure that there's someone out there a lot more intelligent than me when it comes to these situations, set pieces, and there'll be a reason for it. But yeah, as a goalkeeper, I loved having people on both posts.
Blame Kieran Dyer, I think, and Nigel Worthington. Blame those two.
Yes, yeah. Those classic moments.
Another thing that we've not seen much of in recent years was David De Gea having a go at his defenders. There was a poor pass back from Harry Maguire, which he cut out. Ollie Watkins then with, you know, a chance you'd like to think he'd score, but a good save from David De Gea.
He did really well there, David De Gea. Yeah, it was a poor pass back. It looked like David De Gea communicated well to Maguire initially to say, put it on my left foot. He obviously didn't. It was a bit of a panicked pass back. David De Gea did all he could to clear the ball. He recovered really, really well, though, I thought. Got himself back into a good position, and it was a classic De Gea save, I'd say. Quite an upright set. Made the save with his feet. And you mentioned, you know, he did have a little pop at Maguire, which I don't mind. That's, you know, I think that's part and parcel. I think top goalkeepers, you want to have that relationship with your defenders where you can give them a bit and they can give you a bit, but you're doing it very much for the best of the team. And certainly, we keep saying it, but I'm liking what I'm seeing from David De Gea so far this season. He certainly looks like he's got the bit between his teeth.
And Emi Martinez, good save from Harry Maguire in the first half. That was a really good save from that header. But then the penalty missed by Bruno Fernandes. Now, Emi Martin is up to his old tricks again. We saw this in the Copa America, didn't we? I don't think it was as gruesome in terms of the insults that he was handing out to Bruno Fernandes on this occasion, but there were certainly some mind games.
Yeah, there really were. Firstly, on the save, yeah, very good save. Great position, set well, good reactions to his left, excellent save. This does interest me, it fascinates me, because, look, when you consider a penalty, I mean, the drama, the theatre, it's 1v1. It is a shot from 12 yards. They should score. So as a goalkeeper, you want to do as much as you can to stack the odds in your favour. And I think that Emi Martinez now has taken this to another level. So how far can this go? You know, I actually wrote down here boxers before a fight, and you get all the trash talk going on and calling each other this, that, the other. And that's kind of a given thing now. We expect that and we enjoy that to an extent, because that's all part of the theatre, part of the drama, and then they enter the ring, and then who's going to win? It's kind of similar with this. At what point could this get to? Because from a goalkeeper's point of view, there's nothing wrong with it. If that's all part of the game, and you're trying to get into their heads, maybe Emi Martinez is onto something here. You know, I think everybody's done it to an extent. I mean, I even did it a bit when I played, and I'd often say to him, you know, I know where you're going. I've seen you take one before. I know exactly where you're going. So just be careful if you go in there again. You know, things like this that you would just say to them when you're stood near them in the build-up to a penalty. But I think he has taken it to another level, and he's getting massive success from doing it. So it wouldn't surprise me if this is the start of things going to another level when it comes to the mind games pre-penalty.
The referees, though, I mean, it's something that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer also said after the game, didn't he? It's not on. That shouldn't be allowed to happen. And we see the referees obviously telling goalkeepers that they need to stay on their line for penalties, but they never actually seem to get involved in that side of it too much. But
why isn't it okay? Other than it being unsportsmanly conduct or whatever. But I don't know, it happens in cricket. You know, you got the sledging that goes on in cricket, and that's kind of a given thing now. That's all part and parcel, really, to a large extent. And some do it more than others. I just think this is a situation where it does kind of add to the drama. And a lot of the goalkeepers that are that little bit more animated pre-penalty do often seem to get better results than maybe those that just go there and stand on their line and don't do anything and put a half-hearted dive in and don't make the save. I just think that it's the drama, the theatre. Can you get in their head? If you can, look, you're already massively against it. A penalty, what is it, 1 in 7, 1 in 8 that you should save, or whatever the stats say. So you're already massively against it. If there's a way in which you can tip it into your favour just slightly, then why wouldn't you do it?
And he did blast it over, Bruno Fernandes. Can we quickly talk about the shoulder jig from Emi Martin is thereafter? That's something, isn't it, that's not planned, that he's just suddenly done it.
Just the emotion that comes out. I mean, what a moment, though. Actually, consider you are at Old Trafford. It's the last minute, pretty much guaranteeing victory that goes over the bar. That feeling must be phenomenal. So what'd you do in that moment? Now he's decided to do a little jig. That isn't planned. That's just the emotion coming out. That's a little celebration.
It's Pardew-esque, wasn't it? It was Pardew.
It was Pardew-esque. I think this is where goalkeepers haven't celebrated. They don't celebrate. So when it comes to a goalkeeper celebrating, they don't have like a stock Ronaldo celebration. You know, I guess I just hope that we don't suddenly end up doing the Martinez. I don't think that's necessarily the way to go.
Watford 1, Newcastle 1. What a game this was. Anton Deck in the crowd. I don't know whether you saw those.
Well, I saw.
They must have been nearby.
It must have been probably nearer me than you, obviously, director's box. But I don't know if they were. They might have been over your side, maybe. They might have, you know, wanted to slum it. I'm not sure.
Well, we share a birthday, Deck and I. That's why he was there.
Yeah. Which was very recent, actually, by the way. Birthday boy, big 4-0.
Well, that's why you got the ticket. It was on the Saturday, yeah.
What do you mean?
The birthday.
Was it Saturday? It was Saturday, wasn't it? Yeah, there you go. Goodness, oh, I did wish you happy birthday on the day. I did remember.
You did, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big one. So, yeah,
not 40, just to clarify for those who are listening, not 40.
Close enough.
Carl Darlow looking very solid. Ben Foster also with a series of saves. One from Miguel Almiron, the double save from Joel Linton, Jacob Murphy with almost the last kick. Terrible finish that, by the way. Joe Willock, good save from him too, and also did well to hold his ground and retreat when Alan Saint-Maximin was cleaned through.
Yes, so I came away from the game thinking, oh, clear man of the match, excellent performance. But then I did hear a few people say, oh, we should have done better with a goal. Now, where we were sat, you couldn't really see because you weren't directly behind the strike. We saw it sort of side on, and it just looked like a phenomenal finish from Longstaff, and he got fingertips to it, couldn't quite keep it out. I think when you see it again, he'll be a little bit frustrated with it. It does move all over the place, as the Sean Longstaff strikes tend to do, but you could see that he got both gloves to it. He's tried to palm it wide, and the moment he doesn't, it was his reaction that made me realise that he thought he could have done a bit more. You know, he's really hit the ground, and a little bit of frustration there. But then, certainly thereon, I thought he was superb. You know, I wrote down the save with his feet where he did retreat, because I think a lot of goalkeepers, bad back pass, and it's very tempting to rush out and try and make a tackle and more than likely get a red card. He did retreat and then actually gets the slightest touch with his foot, which ended up being quite a vital touch. Big double save that he made, good save to his right, got a very quickly excellent save with his feet where he's taken up a position at the near post, and of course he's moving quickly to get there, sets well, horrible one that's going through his legs. He manages to close his legs just quick enough in order to trap it. Big save on the one-on-one down to his left, which again, my initial thought was whether he'd come too far down the line, but he holds really well and takes up a good position in the end, gets down very quickly, makes a good save down to his left. And then, as you mentioned, right at the end of the game, one-on-one, decides to come quite advanced. He's a good 15, 16 yards out, which, you know, we often talk about maybe starting a bit deeper and then approaching, but in the end it worked perfectly because it hurried the player into making a finish. It was a pretty woeful finish, it's fair to say, but just the fact he was there, big, stood up, and it was effectively the last kick of the game and saved him a point. So yeah, certainly a very solid performance.
Can I quickly just touch on VAR here? You know, I don't really like talking about it, and this will be one of the last times that we properly go into it because it's so boring now, but that's the first time I've witnessed VAR in a live context. Okay,
you enjoy it?
No. That's why, that's exactly why I think it's just a shambles. It's just rubbish. Like, if I could be as layman as I can possibly be, it's rubbish. Mm. Football, and I know that it's such a big business now, but let's not forget that football is also an entertainment, right? So we go there to watch entertainment. We go there to be excited. We go there for thrilling, pulsating action. Mm. Now, Josh King goes and scores his first goal for Watford in a moment of sheer organic euphoria. He rips off his shirt. He runs into the crowd. Harry Hornet is there jumping over everybody. It's wonderful. Watford have won the game in the dying moments. And then, oh, hang on a second, after everybody. And do you know what? I sat still and I thought, I'm going to watch people here. I'm going to watch people and I'm going to watch their reactions. And for a good 30 seconds before play had actually stopped and they started checking the video footage, people were still celebrating. And then you've got the debacles of people shaking other people going, no, it's not a goal. It's not a goal. We haven't scored. We don't know what's happening yet. No one knows what's going on. And then you have to wait 10 hours for the referee to make a decision. At which point on this occasion, he makes his decision. All the Watford crowd think he's given the goal. So we then get A double celebration from Watford fans celebrating again, only for the referee to then signal that he's given the free kick. Carl Darlow has the ball in hand. We get a third celebration from the Newcastle fans. It is an absolute circus act.
The drama.
Get rid.
The drama.
Get in the sea. It is a nonsense.
So the drama and justice. Those are the 2 points here. Drama and justice.
Decisions even themselves out over the course of the season. I mean, and when it's a tiny offside like that, that's what we live for. It's the entertainment. And the problem is that we are still having conjecture with every VAR discussion, like we've just had on this very show about that David De Gea goal that was conceded from Courtney Hawes. We're still saying, should that be a goal? Should it not be a goal? VAR should utterly rule out conjecture, which is something that we love in football. We love to have a discussion, don't we? We love to debate. We love to say, no, I think it's that, but you think it's this. That's the beauty of football. But now with VAR, that has to be ruled out. But it's not being ruled out. We're still talking about it. And we're still saying, actually, I don't think VAR have given the right decision. VAR have to give the right decision.
Mm. Do you feel good now?
No,
I'm
angry.
Can we get back to goalkeeping?
Okay, we'll move on.
Carl Darlow.
Yes.
Yes, let's talk about him because he did play well, I thought. Very good double save, first half in particular. Good save low right as well from Saar. I think it was from the edge of the box. I actually just thought all day he just looked very, very solid. You know, I do enjoy watching him play. It's quite a simple game that he plays for Newcastle. Certainly the way that they play, it's quite direct. He does tend to hit areas, but I thought his distribution was good. Good all day. Certainly kept hitting the correct areas. Decision making was good. And I thought it was a solid performance.
Southampton 0, Wolves...
We're back on track. We're back on track.
Wolves 1. I bet the people on the street don't know what will come to them if they got that from you. Southampton 0, Wolves 1. Jose Saar, I think the best game of the season from him so far for Wolves. A double save from Mo Elianusi and Shea Adams. And an assist. I'm calling this assist. Mm. For the winner from Raul Jimenez.
Yes, let's give him the assist. Absolutely. The double save. Double save is an interesting one for me, in that I think it's one, if the rebound is put in, there could be question marks over whether he could have done more with the save or the initial save, because he has tried to hold it. You could see, does take a little deflection, always going to be tough to hold. It's one of those horrible ones where you're not necessarily in a position to get a good parry away. So he has tried to hold, hasn't, and then does very well to get himself out quickly and smother the second one. So in the end, it does go down as a good double save, but certainly would have been interesting had that second save not been made. And then, yes, let's give him an assist. Why not?
Okay, brilliant. Connor Cody celebrating with him as well, which was nice.
Yeah, it was nice. It's a big win for them. I mean, I know we obviously do focus very much on the goalkeepers, and it would have been tough for him. Certainly the first few games where you're losing narrowly, the team's playing well, and he was doing okay. I know there was one or two goals that we've touched on, but he was doing okay. But it's always nice as a goalkeeper that the good work you do, when you do get a result, we spoke about Melier earlier, and it is frustrating when you have a very good game personally, but the team lose, because it is forgotten so, so quickly. But when you can get those results, then all of a sudden, the good work you do, it's amazing how it's just perceived ever so slightly differently. And certainly Wolves, they're showing signs of a team that will no doubt climb the table. And the bits that we've seen of Jose Saar, I do want to see more of him. It's still very, very early days, but you can certainly see why they decided to spend the money on him that they did.
He did find Jimenez as well, so I do think we can definitely say it was an assist. Jimenez has done brilliantly for the goal, but Alex McCarthy's positioning, just slightly off-centre.
Yeah, well, you mentioned this to me when you send me over a lot of the footage. So a lot I do see myself, but of course you do send me a hell of a lot of footage on a Monday morning, which I get through. And it's tough to see because there isn't necessarily a view which gives you the perfect view from either behind the player shooting or behind the goalkeeper. So it does look like he is slightly off, probably half a yard off, which makes the finish that little bit easier. I think in terms of his depth from the goal, I think that was fine. We're probably talking half a yard, if that.
Okay, finally, just mentioning Edouard Mendy. Chelsea losing for once to Manchester City, but twice denying Jack Grealish.
Yeah, the first one in particular I wanted to mention, because I just think there was an element of surprise from this. Credit to Jack Grealish. Moves inside, takes the shot quickly. It's arrowing into that bottom corner. And it's difficult for a goalkeeper to get set, because when the shot's taken that quickly, no backlift, you're not expecting it. You might still be in the air, or you might not necessarily be able to time the set. And the ability to time the set, get down quickly, get your fingertips to it like he did, which the positioning he had must have been absolutely spot on. We talk about how how upright you are or whether you're that little bit lower. He was that little bit lower for this one, which I think was correct. And it is just a really good save. Perfect save. If he's literally an inch or two out of position near or slightly too close to his near post, which can be a temptation, then this finds the far post.
It is the Championship rundown, starting with Mark Travers, the hero of the hour again for Bournemouth against Luton. In swinging corner, flicked on by his own man, Adam Smith, but brilliantly tipped over.
Indeed. I would actually correct you there and say it was an in-swinging free kick, I believe.
Did I say corner?
You did.
Apologies.
That's okay, because it's important to know that it was a free kick because it was his positioning and his movement. So as it's whipped in, he moves naturally to his right. So if you can picture this, he starts reasonably central, moves to his right based on the arc of the ball. And it's the flicked header. It's the fact that ordinarily the header would then go towards his near post. So his movement was perfect, was correct. The fact it was a flicked header was very, very clever, which meant it was then still going to the far post. So effectively he had to get back on himself. And the speed at which he did that and the quality of the parry to get it so far away from danger and out for a corner, I thought was excellent. Made another good save as well. Ball whipped in under the bar, which I thought he reacted really well to palm over. But certainly looks like he's growing with each game.
Matty Sarkic and Dan Everson with a joint MOM in the goalless draw between Birmingham and Preston. Sarkic saving from Josh Earle. Everson keeping out Tahith Chong and Maxime Collin.
Yeah, two very good performances here. I'll certainly mention the Sarkic save because I think it's 5 clean sheets in 9 for him now, which big credit to him because I know he had one or two questioning him in pre-season where a couple of results didn't go their way, but I think he's been very, very good. And the save he made, it was a reverse, so player cutting in from the left to the right, reversing it back towards that near post. Sometimes the most difficult save to make because, of course, you're moving the other way, but the speed at which he got down to his right I thought was very, very good.
Keller Roos receiving his marching orders as Derby fell to Sheffield United.
Yeah, tough one for Keller. Whether it's a red or not, I'm not sure, but he was a way out of his box. And when you see it again, the player was always in full control. Obviously, in hindsight, should have held his position that little bit deeper. Would have created a one-on-one situation. Of course, he tries to come out and impact play. The moment you don't get there and you create the foul, you're always running the risk.
Middlesbrough's Matty Crooks also receiving his marching orders for sliding in at the hands of Reading's Luke Southwood. Now, I say sliding in because I don't think you can call this a lunge. Neither do I think you can call it serious foul play either, which is what the referee used to describe it to Neil Warnock after the game.
Yeah, I want to give credit to Luke Southwood because I've written in my notes here, so brave, twice actually in this game, incredibly brave, and I'm really liking what I'm seeing of him. I don't think it's a red. Personally, I think as a goalkeeper, you don't mind it if it is one where they are very much going for the ball and you're meeting them 50-50. Yeah, you're going to get the odd cut, the odd bruise, the odd ache and pain from this type of situation. But as you said, it's different. I've had it before. Don't get me wrong. There's many situations where I feel that strikers use this as an excuse just to go in on the goalkeeper. When that's the case, then absolutely it needs to be a red card. But this one in particular, when I saw it, it was a crunching challenge, but not one where I thought the intent was to hurt Luke Southwood.
You almost enjoy those in a sense because yeah. You've gone for it 50-50. It's almost a get up, fist pump. And sometimes, in a weird way, you quite like the aches and the pains.
Oh, it's one of the best feelings yeah. As a goalkeeper. When you meet it and it is 50-50 and you crunch and the ball sticks and they go over the top of you. Yeah, it's one of the best feelings. The one I mentioned it just there is where you can sense they're just using this as an excuse where maybe it's not a 50-50, it's a 80-20. You're getting there first. You know, I've still got scars on my legs from where then strikers just dive in needlessly. And that winds me up. That I don't like. But yeah, I did feel a bit sorry for him here because I think it was a very fair challenge. Credit to Luke Southwood. Very brave. Certain goalkeepers may not go in for this knowing that they could get hurt. But certainly from what I've seen of him, he's very happy to put his head in where it hurts and he got the rewards here.
And then Joe Lumley for Middlesbrough. A couple of good stops during the game. One particular one-on-one from Tom Dellibashiru. Hugely unlucky with such a spawny goal from Alan Halilovic. I hate seeing these ones. But then those scenes at the end, up for the corner, so close.
Well, the thing is, he's always going to be a danger in the box. You know, he's 6'5", 6'6", and he will create a presence. And actually, to start with that, it was a very clever volley back into play, which then created another corner. And then it was a ball whipped in, and he was so close. to get in the equaliser. It's just gone wide of the post. But then, no, his performance was excellent. And I've seen a few write-ups since this game, and a lot of Middlesbrough fans who aren't delighted with the way in which the team are playing, but certainly he's getting a lot of plaudits on a personal level. And he was very good again. Made a good save low to his left. Big one-on-one save. Spreads very well. Again, he is a big man, and the way in which he moves his body to make the save with his foot, I thought was very good. And yeah, you mentioned the goal. Horrible one. Wrong-footed. Nothing you can do. Sporny goal. Look, sometimes happens. I know we're going to talk about one or two others like that that happened in the Championship too.
Ah, yes. Dylan Phillips, I'm presuming you're referring to.
Yeah, it's another good example where I think that on another day, you do the right thing and you make the save 9 times out of 10. But sometimes it's the most unexpected strike that can catch you out. Or in this case, it wasn't a strike. It was one where one-on-one, Dylan comes out, spreads, and he's just miskicked it completely. And the fact that Dylan has already spread, of course, there's nothing you can do, and it just squirms through him without him being able to do anything. No error, no fault, but naturally doesn't look fantastic, and a really frustrating one for a keeper. So similar to the Joe Lumley situation, sometimes you can do everything right but get the wrong result.
And a right result for Chris Maxwell, carrying on his good form for Blackpool last season. Saves from Victor Adeboyejo and Corley Woodrow saw the Tangerines topple the Tykes. And on Friday's game between QPR and West Brom, Sam Johnston out of position for the Andre Gray opener. That was in the first minute of the game as well, that.
Yeah, so talking about Maxwell, really good save in particular, low to his right. Love how he moves, very, very powerful. Brilliant save it was, and an important save as well. And Sam Johnston, this is very much the way that they play now. And this won't be the last time that we see a goal like this conceded by West Brom, whether that is Sam Johnston, Alex Palmer or David Button, to be honest, because they are being told to play so advanced in the same way that Brad Collins was last season for Barnsley, of course, under this manager. So I do feel a bit for him because it's a tricky one. The moment that ball does come through and it's effectively a one-on-one, of course, ideally, in hindsight, it would have made sense to have really dropped and turned it into a one-on-one situation. In this case, Sam Johnston probably wasn't able to drop quick enough, so just decides to hold and set and tries to make the save. But of course, the moment it goes past you and rolls into the net in the way that it does, it's a very, very frustrating position to be in.
And Senny Dieng had made a good save from Adam Reach in the first half, but then didn't quite get his hands on Colin Grant's equaliser.
Yeah, that's a horrible one. Really, really frustrating one for him in that he makes the initial save, isn't quite able to hold it, and the ball almost sticks to the backhand of his glove as it's rising, if you can imagine. As he's gone to grab it, it's kind of gone with his glove and just crept into that near post. Like, the likelihood of it happening is so, so unlikely. And of course, for it to happen at that stage in the game, which then, of course, gave West Brom even more impetus to go on and win the game, a really, really frustrating and difficult moment for him.
Okay, before we move on to the best of the rest from the EFL, we're going to have one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing, it's only a keeper keeper.
So this beggars belief, I think, for me. Sheffield Wednesday, 1-0 up in injury time at Ipswich. Bailey Peacock-Farrell with the ball. Macaulay Bond lurking behind him. All your defenders can see. All your midfielders can probably see. And your strikers can clearly see this as well. No one warns him. Peacock-Farrell drops the ball. In steals Macaulay Bond, a goal for Ipswich. It is Dion Dublin and Shay Given. It's David Johnson and Rob Green. We've seen it before. Horrible.
Yeah, it is. I feel really bad for him because it's one that, firstly, credit to Macaulay Bond. Secondly, credit to the Ipswich crowd.
Yes.
Who have, in unison, just gone silent.
Shh, don't say anything.
So credit to them. You've then got, I think it's the right back for Sheffield Wednesday. You can see just as he's about to drop it, shout, he's behind you. The fact that Bailey Peacock-Farrell doesn't have a look, my gut says that from now on, he'll always have a look. Even if he did, though, you may have seen Macaulay Bond very cleverly, like, positioned himself. It's like the blind spot of a car. You know, he's positioned himself like directly behind him. He's even crouching down a little bit, like sneakily, knowing what's about to happen. And yeah, as you say, credit to him because he nips in and then he's got the awareness of mind in order to set up his teammate for the equaliser. But yeah, horrible, horrible moment because from what I understand and what I've seen, I think Bailey Peacock-Farrell had a solid game up to that point. Ipswich, from what I hear, deserved at least a point from this game. But to get it in that fashion, that will really, really hurt him.
He should look behind him. But just like we say, it's we were talking about it earlier, David Rea and his communication with his backline. Just like it works that way, equally, it should work the other way, where your backline are saying to you straight away, someone is behind you. There was a goalkeeper I used to watch when I was younger, played in non-league in the lower leagues, Paul Hyde, really good lower league goalkeeper. And I always remembered every time he collected the ball, he'd do a twist like that and look. People can't see me doing the twist.
No,
but he'd have it,
I
and he'd
can
twist
confirm
the thing
you
one
are
way,
doing a twist.
And the other way, yeah, to see if anyone was behind him. He always did that. Mm. And yeah, like you say, Bailey Peacock-Farrell will probably do something similar to that from now on.
I kind of feel at this point I should say something in regards to the fact that he's called Paul Hyde, and kind of seems really relevant here. But I'm not quite... Yeah, maybe we just need to take a leaf out of Paul Hyde's book just in case they are hiding. There you go.
Okay, on to the best of the rest from the EFL. Ron Thorvan Hoffman at the double for Sunderland, Bolton's Oladapo Afolayan and Owen Doyle denied by the German.
Yep, decent stop, decent spread, very brave, made himself very big. I am really interested to see how he progresses at Sunderland. Does seem like he certainly made a positive initial impression. It's certainly one of the hardest places, I would say, for a goalkeeper to go. So huge credit to him so far. Of course, Sunderland really flying up the top end of the league, and another big day for him.
Doncaster's Pontus Dahlberg nearly saving a penalty at Plymouth. That just crept in. And then right at the end, he conceded a penalty, which the talented Connor Grant, what a player he is, by the way, absolutely brilliant player, duly converted.
Indeed, yeah, it was a busy afternoon for Pontus. Makes a very good one-on-one save. Frustrating with the penalty that he does get down so well, and it's one of them that hits the inside of the post after he gets a palm on it. And he'll be a little bit frustrated with the cross that comes in. Positive goalkeeping, tries to come out and claim it, but of course, the moment you drop it, how often do we see this? Then the goalkeeper looks to go and make the second save, and so often can lead to a penalty if you're not able to then reclaim the ball at the second attempt.
Jamie Cumming working with Max Aymer to keep out Matty Taylor as Oxford and Gillingham drew. And Josh Griffiths yet again impressing with a strong hand to thwart Daniel Jebberson, Lincoln beating Burton.
Yeah, two very impressive young goalkeepers. Credit to both, actually, because never easy going on loan. And certainly for Jamie Cumming, you know, it's quite a testing environment you're going into. Certainly Gillingham playing the style of football that they do, which will be slightly different to how Chelsea play, I'm sure, but certainly seems like he's adapted to the way they play. Excellent save again, and very much the reason they got a point in this game in particular. And Josh Griffiths, as you mentioned, he's had one or two tough games early in the season, but certainly the last few weeks really is going from strength to strength. And this was an excellent save he made in this game, and he's certainly making a bit of a name for himself there.
And finally, in League Two, Rory Watson of Scunthorpe with two good saves in the first half against Port Vale. Handed the number one spot this term, and unfortunate to be on the losing side here. And Glenmorris still going strong, turning away Yang's ongoing Crawley's win over Bradford.
Yeah, really pleased for Rory Watson. Of course, had some injury issues over the last couple of years, but seems like he's finding his very best form. The two saves in particular he spoke about, very good one-on-one save. Loved his technique on this, moved very quickly low down to his left to make the save. But the free kick save in particular I thought was phenomenal. Left foot over the wall, going top corner, and the way in which he's moved to his right, speed and power, very, very impressive. And yeah, Glenmorris, great save, one-handed save to his left, claws it out the top corner. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, it is that time in the show, and I've already spoke about one club that I'm involved in at Vicarage Road, one that has quite a prestigious guest list, many VIPs on there, I must say. No Matthew Beadle on there, though, unfortunately. But yes, it is that time. It is Clean Sheet Club. We start in the Premier League, and of course it's that man again. Edison topping the Premier League charts. Emi Martinez celebrating a shoulder-jigging shutout. Jordan Pickford fit and clean once more. Jose Sarr, yes way Jose. Into the Championship, Si Moore, people just want more and more. Luke Southwood, a career-first EFL clean sheet. Matty Sarkic, a season-fifth clean sheet. Dan Iversen, if Carlsberg did goalkeepers. Chris Maxwell, 2 from 3 wins in 4 for the Seasiders. Robin Olsen, off the mark for the Blades. Adam Davis, off the mark for the season. Ben Hamer, keeping out his old employers. Into League One, Andy Fisher, no chance you're landing in his net. Ron Thorben Hoffman, welcome to the Clean Sheet Club. Ben Amos, Wilkinson Sword Quattro. into League Two. Luke McGee, four on the spin. Ross Doohan, U2 Han. Mark Oxley, first in six. Joseph Hanang, same. Lawrence Vigouroux, three from five. Nathan Bishop, back in the game for a first win since January 2019. Jason Lutweiler, two in a row for the Leaky Latics. Lucas Coverlan, two in a row for the blank boasting Brazilian. Dean Bouzanis, expertly adjusting to EFL Live. Jojo Wallacott, first since three on the bounce in August. And finally, Shamar George, not so curious when he's on show.
Very good. Very good, Richard. Should we have the table?
Yeah, let's.
Okay, so the table, top of the pile. It's as we would expect it to be.
Well, is it?
It is.
It is, but it isn't.
But it is, though.
But it isn't, because he's played less games.
Yeah, well, okay. But then that's even more like we would expect, because he's just brilliant.
He is just brilliant, yeah.
So Edison, yes, five clean sheets in six games.
Very good.
Just quite remarkable. He's on for a record, I reckon, this season.
Yeah.
Could be broken. And just below him, also on five, but in more games, Matty Sarkic, Cam Dawson, Liam Roberts, and Lucas Coverlan getting up into their five, all in nine games. And just below them, Alisson on four and six, and Joe Murphy still getting his name in, despite only playing seven games. He has four.
Well, there you go.
Lovely stuff. We are back next Monday, of course. Some interviews coming up too shortly. We hope to have them for you. Yes, very shortly. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, between the sticks, keepers
away. Oh, wow.